Hey, serious privacy enthusiasts. Ready to ace your AI data privacy game?
Oh, you bet, Kay. Dive into the world of TrustArc's Nemity Research, your go-to for staying on top of regulatory developments in AI and privacy.
Seriously, Nemity Research maintains a massive privacy and regulatory database featuring expert guidance and analysis from legal and privacy pros.
So save time on privacy research, cut your compliance timeline, and reduce costs with Nemity Research.
Get your regulatory research and insights at your fingertips with a free trial.
So get ahead in privacy compliance and start that free trial today. Go to trustarc.com/nimity-free-trial. Welcome back to Serious Privacy. This is part 2 of our special episode on the coronavirus, or COVID-19. If you haven't listened to the first part yet, it is probably a good idea to start there. In this part of the episode, Kay and I will continue the conversations on employee privacy, regulator guidance, and the collection of health data in these times of crisis. Happy listening!
Thank you, Paul. To start off, we're going to go back to some more questions we had with Lindsay. From there, we'll move into Cameron and Gabe, and that will conclude the second part of this two-part series on COVID. So, Lindsay, my concern or my question is over data breaches and wondering if we're going to get some real guidance around what the data protection authorities, or in the U.S., the regulatory authorities, might be if there is a data breach.
We're actually just starting to see a little bit of guidance based on whether there will be discretion for breaches. Right now, for instance, in Austria, there's a little bit of guidance saying that the 72-hour breach notification time frame is not affected by COVID-19. So you do still have to notify of your breaches. In the work from home guidance, we're seeing guidance that particularly says your employees need to know how to report a breach because it can happen at home. They need to know how to recognize it. As far as any other discretion, we're just not seeing enough guidance yet to say if the data protection authorities will become lax in what they're going to be looking at. I do believe that is something that will come. And I think in a future update, I can provide you with that information. It's just hasn't been the focus as of yet.
Thank you, Lindsay. And we actually at TrustArc published 2 flyers on remote workers, what they can do for privacy and security at home, and then another flyer for top 10 tips for employers and knowing how to report a security breach and how to get hold of security. Because if your internet goes out and something happens and you don't have your contacts for security, you should have that somewhere other than just on your intranet or through your email. Another question is, Lindsay, the other day we were speaking on a podcast with 2 women about sharing children's information online. In that podcast, we talked about the fact that Facebook has become a real asset in Europe because of their ability to help gather data and share important data for the epidemic. And we contrasted that with just recently, they were penalized by the authorities in Europe for their ability to collect data and share it. What do you think about that contradiction there?
I do think it's interesting. I myself am not a social network user at all.
Oh, Paul and I aren't either.
I have very little online presence. I think I have an account with the NHL, that's about it. I do think it's interesting because obviously social networking tools do provide a service, especially in times like this, with getting information out, such as getting information through Twitter, even if it's to point to, hey, go to your local paper because this is being reported by the government. So I do think it's very interesting, that juxtaposition where they're being fined in one instant, but then also being considered quite essential in times like this. I think the authorities will need to look at that and maybe use a bit of discretion in what is reasonable in this specific time frame where we're dealing with COVID. Again, I might not be the best person to answer this because of my kind of loathe for social networking tools, but I can see that coming into play, some sort of discretion, maybe more of a like, hey, I know you're trying to do a good thing here, but don't do it this way. I really can't answer beyond that without invoking personal opinion.
Lindsay, many people may expect that DPAs just give one statement or one guidance document, and that's that. But to me, that doesn't seem to be the case. We've seen already two statements from the European Data Protection Board, also from multiple national DPAs. We see government communication also on privacy and data protection issues. Even the Dutch King has said that he considers privacy also to be vital in these times of crisis. Kudos to him. But what are your observations here?
It feels like this is going in waves as far as guidance. So wave one seems to be generalized guidance from DPAs, regulatory authorities, financial regulators, where it's, okay, we need to get something out there. People need to know just the basics. And then
they're hungry.
Yeah. And so that seems to have been wave one. And then wave two or two seems to be the legislature responding. So for instance,
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So the legislature responding. So not even the legislature, but for instance, in New Zealand, the OPC provided general guidance on COVID-19. And then the Ministry of Health provided basically this guidance saying that hospitality establishments have to keep a guest register. And so then I would say wave three would be the regulatory authorities responding to the legislature or the government decrees. So what we've now seen the OPC New Zealand kind of go back and say, okay, in specific reference to what the Ministry of Health has said regarding these guest registers, this is how we want you to handle it from a data protection standpoint. So I kind of see it emerging in these waves. And so I think we're kind of in the middle of wave two, entering into wave three, as we see more legislatures start to address this. Denmark has also passed a decree saying that the Ministry of Health basically can promulgate regulations that dictates what personal data can be collected during an emergency such as this. So it'll be interesting to see if then the Denmark DPA comes out with guidance specifically regarding what has taken place in the legislature.
I think this is a good point.
It's interesting. Yeah. Lindsay, I was reading a post by IAPP, the International Association of Privacy Professionals, about how the key word is proportionality. That resonated very strongly with me. What do you think about proportionality applying to what we're seeing right now when it comes to personal data, privacy, getting information when it's needed, anything along that line? Any thoughts on proportionality? Or would you suggest a different word?
No, I think proportionality is the buzzword of the COVID-19 epidemic as far as personal data is concerned. Every single guidance that we see, especially coming out of Europe, is mentioning proportionality. So where a data protection authority can't specifically say you can collect X, Y, Z because they just don't want to get into too much specifics, they are relying heavily on the fact that employers still have to exercise proportionality under the GDPR or national law. And I think across the board that is the key factor in all of this. If you're not getting the guidance you need from your specific regulator, then proportionality is the safest way to go.
And then Lindsay, I'm going to follow up a little bit on what you said earlier about how regulation and guidance is going in waves, because we're seeing that a little bit here in the U.S. as well. A lot of states that were front runners in consumer privacy laws, their bills are no longer even alive. And in California, we're seeing an interesting one because we got a couple of different things going on at the same time. We're looking for enforcement from the Attorney General of California for CCPA to go into effect no later than July 1st. There was already concern over that because we're on the third round of draft regulations now, and companies may not have time to come into compliance. But now companies are in a position where they can't even try to work on compliance because of the current environment. And so there's a lot of chatter going around about delaying the regulations and a debate about whether the Attorney General can choose to delay enforcement on July 1st based on current circumstances, or whether the legislature needs to make that official that they can push his date off to enforcement. I kind of think, we can go either way. So we're seeing it worldwide.
I'm interested to see, especially in the United States, what happens with facial recognition services and technology bills. There have been some states that have banned it outright just until they can get a hold on right. what this means from like a privacy standpoint, security standpoint. So I am interested to see if any of this like wave two legislative response has any indication of how they will, maybe government will be using facial recognition services or technology. We've seen in a few jurisdictions where public authorities have attempted to either ask the question or use telecom data in order to track people where they are, locations, just to get an idea of where people are gathering and the spread of the disease. So that's also something that's interesting. It's mostly out of the public sector right now, so it's not something we've been mostly concentrating on. We've been concentrating on private sector, but I am interested to see if anything, there'll be any movement there.
Very interesting.
Yeah, thank you, Lindsay. That was great. Thank you for joining us this time. And we hope to have you on again at a later point. I'm sure we're not done talking about the coronavirus anytime soon.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Kay. Anytime, I'm here for you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Lindsay Palmer, and we seriously couldn't say thank you enough. So from here, we're going to move back into Cameron and Gabe, and we're going to start with that list of top 10. We were running through it with them. We're going to start with that and pick up from there.
So Cameron, one of the other top 10 tips in our list is transparency and making sure that it is also clear that people are working from home, what kind of data is being collected also by the company, but also that there might be additional risks involved. Is this something you and your team, your sales team, are also discussing? And are you making clear to your customers, for example, yes, we are working from home at the moment?
Not necessarily. I mean, anyone that we're prospecting, we're not like necessarily saying, hey, we're working from home. We are changing our message and our goals, because I think it's important to come out of this and try to just be a helpful resource more than anything. Especially around, you know, when you work for a privacy company, we're all about trying to help other companies protect their private data. And our approach to it is, you know, hey, we have these helpful articles, you know, tips from working from home, that kind of thing. I think it just comes without saying, I guess. But I don't think there's anything that we've said to be like, hey, we're working from home. I think it's just kind of goes without saying.
And do you have clients that are asking you for advice on what to do for their own systems? Because I know Spirion is very into the privacy and security. I love your philosophy about, you know, protecting data and limiting sensitive data. Do you have clients that are coming to you with specific issues and questions?
Like our current customers?
Could be current customers. Or do you have an influx of new clients? I'm hoping the answer is yes, that are saying, oops, we need to put something in place.
I haven't seen much activity. Our customer success team has probably encountered some. I would say that, you know, as a company, we have released a free discovery product to deploy on as an agent for your virtual machine. And you can actually download that for free if you wanted to, kind of as a like, hey, we're trying to help. This isn't like a ploy to try to, you know, there's a catch here. It's literally a free discovery agent. And I'm sure Gabe can probably touch on that a little bit more, but it's nice to be able to offer that to our prospects, because we just want to try to help. And in these times, this is probably the best thing that we can do across the board. So,
you know, I'm going to your LinkedIn, because I think it was yesterday that y'all posted a free security thing for people during these times. I know that's a very technical phrase there, free security thing.
That's exactly.
But I'm going to it right now.
That's exactly what Cam was alluding to. And so we have seen a lot of questions from both customers and non-customers about, all right, how can we help keep that information safe? What can we do in particular? And the tool that you're referring to, since one of the challenges is so many organizations in the rush to get people working remotely, means that a lot of information that may have otherwise stayed within certain controlled environments are now in people's homes. And that offer is for folks to go ahead and help themselves understand what sensitive information that they are now working with in those environments and help them clean it up and make sure they're not exposing themselves to yet another problem on top of all the challenges that we're currently facing. So there's been a lot of interest and chatter in a number of different areas of what working from home for these organizations now means, the least of which is that information moving to these remote environments.
Absolutely. I'm looking for that link. I'll make sure that I post that link down in the description of the podcast so people have that to come in. What about incidents? Since we're on,
there you go.
Yeah, that's where we were both going, since we're talking about security. Incident notification and security concerns. Most employees are taught how to report potential security concerns. The security incidents are through the roof right now with the phishing and the scams and the fraud and the hacking. It's outrageous. What else do you recommend for employees working from home about incident notification and security concerns? It could be tips about how to avoid something, as well as it could be, what are you seeing that employees need to know? Like, one of the big things I picked up on is, in case their internet goes out, they need to have the notification contact for security somewhere else, on their phone, on a post-it note on their wall, something.
That's huge. That's very, very important. From an incident notification standpoint, I think that's probably one of those areas where organizations need to make sure that they are over-educating their employees, because containment of that incident is equally as important. And if unfortunately something were to happen, those channels may now be otherwise disrupted as well. And there's a lot of phishing attacks and all kinds of other malicious activity that's currently going on in this environment. And incident notification is going to increase quite a bit. Part of the challenge these organizations are going to have is how they respond to these incidents, how they triage them, how they prioritize them, and how they respond to them. So having multiple channels for those are a very good start.
Have you seen a big uptick in security concerns, or is there something that specifically comes to mind that kind of surprised you that is occurring?
Not about anything that's a surprise, but I might be an old cynical grizzly security vet. So, but there's an uptick. There's very much an uptick. Where there is chaos breeds opportunities for bad actors. And there's a significant uptick in every type of activity you can think of, from just the random malicious, no good Nick who wants to Zoom bomb someone, to folks who are actively phishing and trying to get access to data as well too. There's an uptick across all vectors. One of the things that bad guys are pretty adept at is adapting their capabilities rather quickly. They are certainly more agile in doing so than we are as defenders, just kind of the natural landscape of things. And so there's an uptick across all vectors of attacks right now.
Right. I think one of the first things that came out was a false website tracking COVID-19 activity and, purporting to be a World Health Organization or a CDC. And it was not. It was a fraudulent site.
Yeah, we've seen dozens of apps, especially in the Google Play Store. We've seen also lots of text messages claiming to be from banks, that bank cards need to be replaced by self-disinfected bank cards to fight corona. You got to give it to the criminals. They have become very creative in coming up with new ideas of things that we might like in the future, but that doesn't mean that we should fall for them now.
Yeah, creativity is not one of their challenges as bad guys at all, not even a little bit.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the other things that I want to get to. So privacy laws in countries. So we know here in the U.S. we have different privacy laws than the EU does, than South America does, than Australia does, than Canada does. Are you seeing any, or do you think there's any additional controversy with U.S. companies trying to manage privacy under these circumstances, but yet they fall under the laws of other nations as well? Maybe things such as taking temperature as they come in the door.
I don't even know if I don't even like that for U.S. companies, much less ones that fall under other countries' regulations. But I apologize though. So specifically, you're asking if
What do you see under the current circumstances, the privacy issues that we're dealing with? And Gabe, if this is a stupid question, then we can just skip to the next one. Sure. But are you seeing any particular conflicts between how U.S. companies are managing privacy right now, especially if they fall under laws of other nations as well? In other words, do they have a bifurcated approach? They're doing something different here in the U.S. than they are in Europe?
Yeah, I think the biggest conflict you see is that U.S. companies weren't used to dealing with privacy at all. They weren't used to enforcing it even a little bit. And now,
right.
Yeah, now they are being asked to do so under, you know, the California Consumer Protection Act. I think one of the things that we saw, Google themselves challenged the EU on whether or not they had to enforce someone's right to be forgotten in jurisdictions outside of the EU. And so what we're seeing is this natural resistance of businesses to remediate data that is their lifeblood. That's probably the biggest friction. I see more friction in terms of businesses that thrive on data, which is most businesses these days. And there's the friction between that versus the friction between US laws and international laws. I think we can find ways to synergize those two. And one of the just kind of best practices is typically, you know, you apply your controls at the highest level, the most stringent level, and that then just ensures that you don't have to bifurcate your practices. But the friction really hits the rubber meets the road in the friction there when it's the business practice that starts being interrupted by the privacy laws, whether they're US or international ones. Organizations are reluctant and resistant to change, especially as it will change their bottom lines.
Do you think there is sufficient guidance available from governments, from governmental authorities, from independent supervisory authorities on what is allowed and what isn't allowed in these days?
There absolutely is not. So much so that under CCPA in particular, there's a lot of vague language in there. It was written very quickly. There's a lot of interpretation that still needs to be borne out through GDPR as well. A lot of things will be challenged in the courts, and that will equally, you know, change the guidance, if you would. Certainly guidance, not at all. It might be somewhat anecdotal, but we too have a privacy lawyer on our staff, Scott Giordano. Shout out to Scott Giordano.
Yes.
Give him a shout out. And the number of requests we get for his time to be able to get clarity and guidance around all these things, it's incredible. It's significant. When we host webinars with him, the number of people that flock to those are huge for exactly that reason. There's certainly not enough guidance, and folks are hungry for guidance.
So what impact does that have on your immediate operations?
Well, we have some scale issues there. Obviously, I've only got one Scott Giordano. Unfortunately, I'd love to.
There is only one Scott.
There's only one Scott. I'd love to clone him, but you know that's probably the most immediate one. The other one it has is when folks are actually trying to implement our solutions for their greatest security and privacy needs, it really means we have to spend a lot of time helping them understand how best to make sure that they don't fall afoul of those things. It's not a negative impact. It's more of a scale thing, just, you know, making sure that we spend enough time with each person and each customer so that they understand those things.
You hear some people say, well, why should we care at all about privacy in these times? Let's fight the crisis first. Then let's make sure that we recover the economy, because the economy all around the world is taking a very big hit, probably more so than in 2007, 2008. So why care about privacy? It's only a stand in the way. It's only a hindrance at the moment.
It's a luxury, not a necessity.
Yeah, I think the only people that say that may be somewhat ignorant to the realities of what happens when we lose control of our privacy, especially if we were to lose control of it to foreign adversaries. You will just be fighting one challenge after another. So you can get out in front of it now and you know, kind of suffer through some of the pains of that, or you can lose it forever. It's not something that, all right, I'll ignore it now and I'll deal with it later and it'll still be there to deal with. Once you lose it, it is gone. You don't regain that privacy, certainly many aspects of it, once it's been compromised. So that's the real reason to pay attention to it now, is it's a one-time event. It's a one-time event. You don't get to unring that bell.
Yeah, that sounds fair to me. That's also one of the things that, of course, the commissioner alluded to in the conversation I had with him earlier today. Privacy is a fundamental right, and we should be careful. Because especially in times of crisis, these are things that are easily set aside, but very hard to get back.
That's right. That's exactly what it is.
It is. And in looking at some of the questions that are going across, we did a webinar the other day on an update to U.S. law. And during it, one of the attendees wrote me a question and said, did we think, and now our law wasn't specific, our updates weren't specifically on COVID-19, but of course you can't give an update on U.S. law right now without covering it. They asked that, was there any guidance that whether or not you can ask employees for, what is it when they come off an FMLA or a workers' comp, return to work or fit for duty. There you go. Could you ask employees for a fitness for duty report in order to come back to work after this COVID-19 episode passes?
I mean, do we ask cancer patients to do that? No, I don't know why this should be any different, quite frankly. I mean, it's, if someone were to, let's say this were not a pandemic. Let's just say it was not a pandemic and they had come down with COVID-19. And COVID-19 wasn't a pandemic. Would we ask the same? Or is it that we're only asking because it's highly contagious? Because, you know, there are lots of things that are highly contagious. I don't think that's reasonable. That's me as an individual, as someone who cares about, you know, privacy and in his own privacy kind of deeply, to push back on that one. What is so different about this scenario that one would need to prove their fitness for work any more than, say, you know, you broke your hand, can you still type? No one asked that question. I'm sure the ADA would be all over this one. I don't see that one really getting a whole lot of airtime beyond kind of the mental exercise of it. There's no way that one holds up in any court of law in this country, I believe anyway. But again, not a lawyer, but
I love that. Want to disclaim that. No legal advice here on the thing.
No.
There are two websites that I am following that give very daily updates on guidance from regulators around the world, including on legislation, on COVID, privacy, on everything. The two websites, the two law firms, Fisher Phillips and Ballard Spahr. So I'm looking at the Fisher Phillips one. We'll make sure to provide these links in the description. Well, you're going to get all kinds of links in the descriptions for these podcasts. But this one was an updated question, and it was, during a pandemic, may an ADA-covered employer ask employees who do not have symptoms to disclose whether they have a medical condition that the CDC says could make them especially vulnerable to complications? And this one had to be updated based on new advice, and it was generally no. However, if it becomes severe or serious, according to any level of geographic health officials, they may have sufficient objective information to reasonably conclude that employees will face a direct threat if they contract it, and then they could make disability-related inquiries or require medical examinations of asymptomatic employees to determine which employees are at a higher risk of complications. Does that scare you? That scares me.
It worries me. Yeah. I'm not comfortable with that. Not at all.
Yeah.
I'd like to understand.
Right?
Yeah. What's missing for me in that is like, what's the justification, right? Like, what exactly is the justification? More importantly, what outcome are you trying to drive with that? That worries me.
Right.
Under GDPR, all of this would just not be allowed. It's fairly straightforward. Everything related to Corona and COVID-19 and your medical conditions are special categories of personal data for which the processing is restricted. The employer cannot just force you to provide that information, not even in an indirect way.
It feels so self-evident, doesn't it?
It does.
Right. It does. But again, I hate to keep saying U.S. point of view. When are we going to wake up and join the real world when it comes to privacy? So, yeah, because we even had HHS, the Department of Health and Human Services, even came out with two advisories. One advisory was about how you can share HIPAA-related information, PHI. Now, Paul, for you, I don't know if you work a lot with HIPAA in the United States. Trust me, people who work with HIPAA don't necessarily understand all the nuances of it. But PHI, protected health information, under HIPAA is only protected health information if the company is subject to HIPAA. And companies are only subject to HIPAA if they file one of 11 types of electronic transactions, most of which are centered around health claims. So with that foundation that not all medical information is considered protected under HIPAA, there were these two advisories that came out. The first one was just explaining current status of HIPAA and where you can share information, that first responders can share medical information about people, doctors can share medical information about a patient to their loved ones, their friends, their family, even without the person's permission. All of that has already been part of HIPAA. HIPAA was never intended to get in the way of patient care. But the second advisory was about how they're going to suspend enforcement on HIPAA violations, not all of them, but they're going to suspend enforcement on a lot of violations, especially when it comes to telehealth. So being able to treat patients at a distance, and when it comes to whether or not there is the appropriate agreement in place between a vendor that you might be sharing this information to, but you had to get them on board quickly in order to manage the circumstances. How does that resonate with anyone in that one of the only privacy laws we have?
The latter part, I understand that you cannot immediately do an impact assessment or a risk assessment when you need to act quickly to resolve a major crisis. That is fully understandable. And again, with my European hat on and looking at the GDPR, there is even often a possibility to postpone certain obligations, especially in relation to individual rights, as long as the essence of the fundamental right is respected, which means that at some point later on, when everything has quieted down, you may still want to do that risk assessment or that privacy impact assessment and put the proper safeguards in place. And that will be after the fact, and it may be that there were some problems in between, but at the same time, then you resolve them later on and you acknowledge that during a time of crisis, you ignored those just to be able to solve the crisis first. And there, I think that would be acceptable. But just not to enforce the law all out, that seems too far. Going too far.
I don't know if I have anything intelligent to add on top of that, other than I wholeheartedly agree. That just seems like it goes well too far for all the same reasons. I certainly would not endorse that.
And luckily, also the California Attorney General has said that also he still intends to enforce CCPA as of July 1st or when the regulations are finalized. So also in California, you see
that
the privacy laws will still be enforced despite everything else that is going on. And I applaud him for that.
And despite the fact that the regulations haven't been passed yet.
Well, that's the tiny detail, but...
Okay, I'm going back to these FAQs because these are really striking some good conversations here. We are at the top of the hour. So last question. And by the way, Cameron and Gabe, like I said early, this may very well wind up being two separate sessions. We've got about 20 minutes of some legal analysis or legal updates to come from one of our European researchers. So we have that to add in as well, which one of the words that resonated there was proportionality. So this probably isn't the best question to close on, so it might not be the last one. Another one under discrimination issues. Do we have any discrimination, equal employment opportunity concerns related to COVID? The only thing they answered was employers cannot select employees for disparate treatment based on national origin. And the CDC recently warned, do not show prejudice to people of Asian descent because of fear of this new virus. Do not assume that someone of Asian descent is more likely to have COVID-19. Now, I thought, one, it's a shame we had to put that out there because, of course, that's logical. But two, they didn't address any other issues. Older people are considered more vulnerable to COVID-19. People with pre-existing health conditions are considered more vulnerable. And the only discrimination they addressed were people of Asian descent.
That may be part and parcel to just the overall political landscape. That's possible. I'm just speculating here. It is a good question. Maybe it's one of those scenarios where folks are simply not anticipating that will be a concern. And the way I've observed our overall legislative process in the U.S. is we tend to cover just the, you know, as much as we need to. It's kind of a just-in-time law, if you would.
Right. Just the minimum necessary.
Minimum necessary. That feels very just-in-time to me. It's like, let's cover what we know is an open issue out there now, and let's not speculate and try and over-legislate the rest, which... to be fair, I can kind of understand and agree with, right? There's always a balance with legislation and not going too far too fast. But it is interesting that was neglected to be put in there. That does not seem like oversight. That feels somewhat intentional.
Right.
Hopefully.
It does, right?
Yeah.
Especially when you can see that there might be discrimination issues, which cross over with privacy issues when it comes to people that may have vulnerable populations at home, the older people with pre-existing health conditions, children. I mean, can you see discrimination against women for having to take care of children? Because somehow that seems to be the default norm, as opposed to men who need to take the time to take care of children.
Yeah, I think you will almost guaranteed see that, unfortunately. That is a thing. Yeah, that's a thing for sure.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Absolutely is a shame. And if the work from home persists, you are almost guaranteed to see some favors being levied in one direction over the other. I think it's upon all of us in positions where we can influence those things to ensure that they don't occur, though.
Well, and I will say that, funny enough, I think I've seen it happening. The discrimination, and I'm doing air quotes here that you can't see, is because, and I've actually read studies on this, men get the allowances to take care of children because it's not their standard way of operating. Women should be able to do it without allowances because they do it all the time.
I agree.
And so men are given extra time or leeway in order to do it. Crazy. I don't know that this is across the board, just speculating here. This might be one of those controversial topics that people are all up in arms on when they hear us talk about it. Paul, hit me with a really good closing question, because Cameron and Gabe are full of wonderful information, although I haven't heard as much from Cameron as I would like to. So Cameron, you're going to answer this question first, that Paul's going to give you hit with something brilliant.
Oh, man, put me on the spot.
She puts me on the spot as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
So in wrap up, Cameron, if you can give one recommendation to everybody who is now forced to work from home from the privacy security perspective, and we've already discussed the video sharing and keeping your documents secure and all of that, but if there is one other thing that you could tell them, what would that be?
I mean, I think one good thing to kind of touch in, and I think Gabe was kind of talking about this a lot earlier, I think we touched on it, was, you know, be mindful of your surroundings and try to plan out your day as if you're actually going to work. So I would say get up normally like you would when you were going to work, take a shower, get ready, you know, find a nice place in your house that's actually quiet and away from distractions. And I think that allows for less, just more productivity, and you will have less privacy issues when it comes to someone running in and, or like, you know, your wife coming behind you and being, you know, just displaying any kind of privacy that, when it comes to physical privacy. But I don't know. I think that goes a long way, because, and again, I think also using video with everybody in your company a lot more than you used to is key too, because a lot of people probably miss those relationships in the office. They miss that connection. And I think when you're talking with people, if it's prospects, your company, whatever it be, I think using video and that kind of communication is really, really helpful and key.
Absolutely. Gabe.
Oh, and before Gabe jumps in, I'm gonna steal one thing that's technical that he can touch on even further, and I'll throw out a shameless plug, which is using something like Privacy Badger as a good little thing to throw onto your computer to help with privacy.
I love it.
Appreciate that, and that tells me we've been really on the same mind waves, Cam, because that actually is one of the things I was going to suggest, which is, and Privacy Badge is just one of them. Take additional but reasonable precautions above and beyond what you would have normally done anyway. And things like installing Privacy Badger into your browser, which helps protect your privacy when browsing. Amongst others, you've got, you know, uBlock, you've got AdBlock Plus, you've got Ghostery, you've got HTTPS everywhere, you've got Disconnect. I have all of those and then some installed in my browser. Those are great from both a professional and a personal perspective. Again, we talked about bad guys being very creative, and one of the ways that they're going to understand and track who they should be attacking is by placing, you know, relatively benign but malicious tracking capabilities throughout throughout different parts of the web, etc. So take those additional precautions to protect yourself. And I think if as an individual, you took those precautions to protect yourself, many of those will naturally equally help protect the things that you work on, because the things that you work on ultimately affect other people just like you, the person across the street and up the block, etc. So be mindful. Just like Cam said, be mindful. Think about those actions when you're interacting with information. Pretend that information were your own. Pretend it were that of your significant others, your mothers, your neighbors. Be mindful.
Thank you very much. If people want to reach out to you to learn more about all your expertise, where can they reach you?
Well, they can reach us www.spearin.com. They can find us online on social media, on Twitter. You can find me at Gabriel Gums. You can find Spearin at Spearin. Cam?
You can find me at Cam D. Ivy. And you can find our podcast at Privacy PLS POD.
Good. And for all the listeners, if you like our series, please do tell your friends and colleagues about us as well. Should you have any questions or suggestions, please reach out via seriousprivacy@trustark.com or via Twitter at podcastprivacy. You will find Kay on Twitter as Heart of Privacy and myself as EuropolB. Thank you again for listening to Serious Privacy. Until our next episode, goodbye.
Bye, y'all.
Hey, listeners. Looking to navigate the realm of responsible AI data privacy governance? Well, look no further.
Absolutely. TrustArc is paving the way, offering a complete approach to managing privacy risks in the world of AI.
TrustArc allows organizations to confidently use AI with personal or sensitive data, moving forward efficiently and cost-effectively.
And here's the kicker. Protect your company and data with TrustArc's privacy-driven compliance software.
Because their deep automation streamlines data privacy governance, cutting your time to compliance with automated data mapping, risk assessments, and regulatory reporting.
TrustArc's enhancements go way beyond that, helping organizations understand AI better and align cross-functionally on data governance, privacy, and security.
Plus, they provide guidance on privacy governance for AI and how to mitigate risks using frameworks like NIST AI, OECD AI, and the NIMACY Privacy Management Accountability Framework.
If you're aiming for compliance excellence, check out Privacy Central, seriously one of my best parts. It uses automation and privacy expertise to understand your requirements, build and manage your privacy program with ease.
Oh, I agree. Privacy Central is your go-to to measure your progress toward responsible AI data compliance.
Stay ahead with TrustArc's Privacy Central. Visit TrustArc.com now. Ask me and Paul if you have any questions.